This is Life Talk, where we tell it like it is. Life Talk is motivational, helping you get to the next level in life. Life Talk is educational to broaden your knowledge. Life Talk is inspirational to get you fine-tuned to start doing what you love doing. Life Talk, sponsored by KamerEducation.org. And here's your host, Marietta Kammerer.
You're my world, you're every move I made. Other eyes see the stars up in the sky, but for me they shine within your eyes. As the trees reach for the sun above, so my arms reach out to you, my love.
Hello and welcome to Life Talk with Marietta. I am your host, Marietta Kammerer. We have uncertain times around the globe with daily, hourly, and by the minute with new developments and changes. Every human being is affected by the war in Ukraine, and I have lots of questions for my guests tonight. The mind-body connection, health in our minds directly improve health in our bodies, is the topic. Our guests are Dr. Chris Gilbert, MD, PhD, and author, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Chris. Good evening.
Good evening, Mariette. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for being with us. And Julie Winter, psychotherapist, will join us around 7:35 and how to adjust and protect our mental health in these uncertain times. So I have no announcements. I am full with questions. So, Mr. Engineer, let us go and start right with the first segment.
I saw the light on the night that I passed by her window. I saw the flickering shadows of love on her blind. She was my woman. As she deceived me, I watched and went out of my mind.
You are tuned in to Life Talk with Marietta. I am Marietta with Dr. Chris Gilbert tonight. And health in our minds directly improve health in our bodies. Our first segment is psychological impact of victims of war and conflict. So I'd like to get a perspective from a medical doctor's point of view from Dr. Chris, because over 3.5 million people have fled the Ukraine country, entering Poland, Romania, Germany, and the news just continues. Dr. Chris, this entire theater, from first disbelief to sudden uproar, danger, fear, and killing escalated so quickly. So allow me to start asking, fight or flight or freeze, what is that all about? When people are in the fight or flight or freeze mode, what's going on?
Yeah, it is so stressful for them. They have to cope with so much. They have to cope with the loss of the member of their family, loss of friends, loss of their home, loss of possessions, loss of sometimes parts of their body if they're wounded. You know, they've lost past, the part of their past, but they've also lost their future. And it's loss of predictability and control of the future. And that is where stress comes from. And when there is stress, an intense shock like this, and overwhelming loss, the body gets into, and there's adrenaline rush, and they have to decide. It's either fight or flight or or freeze. And fighting is that they have to be ready to have arms with them. Flight is they have to be ready to go away and flee. But a lot of them just freeze, and they don't know. They're so much under shock they cannot move, and that's very understandable because when this is the case, the mind very often shuts down all conscious emotion, and the person will feel kind of numb because the future is so uncertain. So what we need to address their basic needs of food, shelter, and safety. But then there will be their PTSD. There's so much. So I want to talk about a psychologist who is Natalia Monosova, a well-known psychologist in Ukraine who just fled to Hamburg, Germany, with her 14-year-old daughter. And she was interviewed by Kaya Perina, the editor-in-chief for Psychology Today, on March 17th, just a few days ago. And Natalia Monosova says that PTSD is just like a bomb brought home from the war, a bomb which will explode and destroy everything from the inside. I was quoting her. And so emotions afterwards will come up, will be grief, deep sadness, helplessness, depression, and anxiety. And from those emotions, there won't be much power generated, but then there will be anger, and anger will give power, which will get the helplessness feeling out of the people. That will get them more sense of control over their lives. And for little girls, for example, it's hard to express anger and rage because they've never been taught, they've always been taught to be nice. But it is important to express that in a constructive, creative way. I'm going to quote also Natalia Mononosova, that she says, "Now I know for sure that you can lose everything in an instant. But the main thing is not to lose yourself. What is yours cannot be lost." And she says, "My experience, my knowledge, my love, my friendship, my faith, and ability to survive, that cannot be lost." And she says, "That's who I am, and as long as I'm alive, no one can take that away from me. I exist, and that is enough to live and help others." And I think that's such a lesson of, you know, what to do in those cases, because it's not that simple of fight or flight or freeze. It's you've got to find a reason to live, a reason to be alive, and that reason is just that yourself, your own self, cannot be lost.
Right. We all remember the first movement when the war started, and we saw lines and lines of cars heading toward the border. It was a rather short trip, but because of the amount of people, it ended up days. Sometimes people were just stuck in their cars, and they just left the cars behind and took their suitcase, their children, their pets, and were heading for the Polish border. So that was the first movement. Now, some of the relatives, some of the women returned to Ukraine, and they were asked, "Why are you returning?" And they were saying, "We want to fight. We want to support our soldiers and the first responders to make them feel good." That was one woman's statement. Now, also, I have seen interviews where older men were in Poland over the border in safety, and they went back. "That's where I belong," he said, "and it can't be any better in another country." That's what he said. I don't know what goes on, why people make these decisions. It's a very personal decision. And I'm sure if they were going against it, they just couldn't live with themselves. If they would not act upon their desire to go back and do whatever.
I think they feel guilty because they're abandoning their loved ones. So part of them just, they know they're safe in another country, but they feel so guilty because they cannot help their loved ones. So they have to come back and help their loved ones. Otherwise, they could not live with themselves. I think it's such a hard decision to either leave your loved one and go to safety, or stay and risk your life, but stay for your loved ones. There's no perfect solution. They're both equally devastating.
Yes.
And only each person can make their own decision.
Exactly. And I'd like to share with you, Doctor, and with our audience, I was in a position once where my father was dying. He was in the hospital, and he was dying. I had never experienced death, and he could still hear. We were in his room in the hospital, and I was so frightened. He was breathing hard, and he could still hear, and I just couldn't. I was so scared. I needed to go out in the hallway. And as soon as I went out to the hallway, I had to go back in because I had that same feeling. If I was not with him, if I had just given in to my fear, I would have not been able to live with myself. So I went right back in. But I went through this bath of emotions. It was incredible. But I stayed by his side, and he was able to still hear me. And I held his hand. So that was a situation where I just had to do what I had to do. So I can pretty much understand when they say, okay, we're in a safe environment now, but I'm going back to my loved ones. But then also, Dr. Chris, the people that never left because maybe they were immobilized and needed help getting out. We were talking about some people that are disabled. We're talking about some very young children, and we're talking about some elderly people. We saw that because then as the war went on for about 10 days, you could see a different group of people. First, it was the younger woman with the children, and then different ages were starting to move out of the country. You could see them. So, but now we have people that just stayed, and they're being bombarded every single day. They're being shot at every single day. So, and they try to stay in cellars. They try to go for safety, and, you know, now they're running out of food, water, and they're really afraid for their lives.
Yeah. And I think at this point, they're accepting that they might die, and it seems like it's okay with them. It does seem that it's okay with them, and they just pray and see what's going to happen. They have this strange peace. They don't seem completely panicked. They actually seem very peaceful, and accepting whatever is going to happen.
Interesting you should say that, Dr. Chris, because one of the articles that I came across, which I will put into the Healing Mind magazine for April, in the April issue, it's about this woman. She's in her 50s. She must have been interviewed, and the article was translated from Russian to English and so forth, German. And she said, my building, and there were high-rise, 10 stories high, all around her. Her building was the only building that got slightly hit by a couple of missiles, but a few windows are the building still stands. The building is okay. Everything else around her is just devastation. And she takes out her little dog. The dog doesn't weigh more than 20 pounds, and the dog gets scared all the time when he's out. And she just said, I think I'm going to die here. Everything is very quiet. She feels very quiet about looking at everything, the devastation. It's just, she said, I'm afraid when I see people that are alive now. That's what it said in the article.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I think the people in Ukraine, they've been through so much in the past. So, yes, it's not like us in the United States that have had a wonderful life. You know, our kids are just brought up in a cocoon, you know, but in Ukraine, they've had a hard life, and that's really much harder right now, yes.
Yeah, she's saying that when she takes out her dog, she says, across the street, the stairwell of building 105 is burning. The flames have eaten 5 floors, and they're still going. You know, they're on the 6th floor. But everyone in this town, and we're talking about Mariupol, if I pronounce it right, Mariupol, she's saying, everyone in this town is always waiting for death. I just want it not to be very terrible. 3 days ago, a friend of my oldest nephew visited us and told us that there was a direct hit on the fire station. The guys, the rescuers, were killed. A woman's arm, legs, head were torn off. I dream that all my body parts stay in place, even after an aerial bomb blast. So she is really, she is, yeah.
And the rare people that survive and will manage to go back to safety, imagine the huge emotional traumas surviving this. It's just it's huge. That's going to influence them for the rest of their life if they manage to survive this. And nonetheless, it's going to influence their kids and their grandkids. It's the effect on health, physical and emotional health, is huge. If they survive, yeah. And if they don't survive, it seems that they have accepted this. Yes.
Oh my God! And I'd like to read one more sentence. I try to cry, but I can't. I feel sorry for myself, for my loved ones, my husband, neighbors, friends, and I return to the basement and listen there to gruesome iron crunching. 2 weeks have passed, and I do not remember that at some point there was another life. So I'm just reading just a few lines out of the whole article. I will put that article in. I translated it into English, and it will be in the April Healing Mind. We're just going for a quick music break so we can change the topic. Over to the soldiers that are fighting the war and their mindset and everything.
I, who have no one, must watch you go dancing by, wrapped in the arms of somebody else. We're darling, it's I who loves you.
Life Talk with Marietta, you tuned in. Our topic tonight is all about our mental state. We're over in Ukraine first, the civilians. We're going to talk about the soldiers. How does a soldier feel during a war? And I had to tell myself, I have no idea. So I had to go on a research hunt on the internet. And a wide range of emotions that are going on, from terror, exhilaration, loneliness, joy, depression, and boredom. And, of course, there are books written, which I have never read. I never had a reason to look at all of this. Now I do. So, and I'd like to bring in Dr. Chris Gilbert. You know her. She's been – oh, and congratulations. This is the 22nd time that you're on Life Talk with Marietta. That's a good number to play, Dr. Gilbert, just to enlighten this topic up a little bit. No, thank you. You're a gem. I'm very happy and proud that you're with us when you are.
The 22nd time on Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022, right? There are lots of twos.
That's a lucky number. That's a lucky number, Dr. Chris. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Rich. Thank you. That lightens up the load a little bit. What's going on in a soldier, Dr. Chris, especially, let's say, when they're in the battlefield and they're not actively fighting yet, and they're waiting, and they hear some strange noises in the background. They don't know if somebody's playing with the gun or if they should go in position. And, of course, the people, their comrades, they're new, too, so they're not that versed in really what's happening. And so the story that I came across was a woman from Germany, a German soldier, and she just could not take the waiting and the fear, the unknown, whether she should be, on alert or not, even though nothing was happening. And that was very, very bad for her.
And yeah, they get very anxious, yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They get very anxious because they never know when a blast will come. So some of them really cling to their arm, and it's just amazing the kind of emotions that can go through their mind. I talked to an American soldier who was in the war in Iraq, and I was surprised because I thought what could be important and striking was that he's now taught to kill, and killing other human being could be very traumatizing. But he said no. He said what was traumatizing for him was something else. He said that he had a huge bond with his fellow soldier, and he described this bond was so deep that it couldn't be put into word. And he said what the worst thing for him and the most traumatizing for him was to see his best friend with his head exploding next to him. And he said, and the moans once an IED explodes, the moans and screams of another friend who was manly and macho, but as he was dying was crying and calling for his mother. And he said there was the smell of blood, the smell of feces, there was chaos, and explosions went off. And those are the images that he kept deep inside his brain and he couldn't get out of his brain. There's another thing that he could not unsee was a little girl who had her arm blown off, and she was holding a doll in the other arm, and she was running around looking for her mommy and daddy, who were dead under the rumble. And also he said what haunts him is he almost killed a civilian by mistake. He said he couldn't unsee the look in the eyes of a little girl when he almost killed her. She was coming up to his vehicle, holding a little brother by the hand and asking for food. But the vehicle had stopped in a very dangerous place where there had been ambushes. But the little girl still came to him when he had his 9mm out with the safety off. And she came to him because she was used to trust soldiers before. And right as she approached with her little brother, a 50 caliber machine gun started firing around. And the soldiers saw that he thought they were under attack. And his gun was pointed at the little girl. And he almost pulled the trigger towards the little girl. And she saw that. And the look of betrayal in her eyes was like, I trusted you and you were going to kill me. Well, fortunately, he didn't kill her. But he says he cannot unsee that look of betrayal and fear in her eyes. And this soldier was almost a war criminal. So he didn't kill, but other soldiers in the same situation did kill little children. And that's why, war is so messy, and civilians and innocent adults and children do get killed. And that's why, because of those situations, other people cannot understand this. So the soldiers that come back, they're so isolated, and that's why they get into alcohol and drugs to calm their depression and anxiety. And we have no idea about that. We really have no idea what we do to those kids, to those young men, when we send them into combat. So those are examples of what happened from the soldiers. But I'm sure this happens also in Ukraine.
Right. I came across an article, a former German army, Roland Batsetsko, and he was talking about that the war zone is a real busy place. So you're busy doing your job. You don't have time to ponder about what if questions because you're just really busy doing your job. But it's only after the battle you have time to think about how narrowly you've escaped death. And this indeed is a problem for many soldiers. And he said, I always hated it when there were longer breaks between combat missions, because the more you thought about what you were doing, the more you realized that you could easily lose your life. That's what Roland Brzezetsko said, a former German army. So then he also said going from battle to battle is a little like Russian roulette. After you survived one battle, the odds to get killed in the next one seems to be much higher. So also, soldiers have different ways to cope with this. Most of us try to keep ourselves busy during the breaks or simply avoid thinking about it. Many soldiers choose alcohol to empty their brains.
Yeah.
That was Roland's little story. But going back to this German soldier, this lady soldier, she just really could not, just nothing was happening. They were not in an actual fighting, and everybody around her, all the other soldiers, they had combat. They had lack of combat experience, just like herself. And just that waiting and not knowing what was happening, and she resigned afterwards. She resigned because also one of the statements in one of the stories, once the bullets fly, you know what's going on, where your enemy is positioned, how far away they are, and how strong. You can do something about it. Even the biggest cowards will feel less fear because now he knows in which direction he can run away. So stand still must be the must be terrible, and especially for an inexperienced soldier. That's what I got out of this one article.
That's right. An intense, the soldiers describe also the feeling of joy and happiness, which is very paradoxical, and that makes them feel guilty, actually. They describe the first reaction could be when their best friend is getting killed next to them, that they're actually, the first feeling is they're happy, it's not them. They have joy that they're still alive when their friend is gone, and that makes them feel so guilty afterwards, because they're thinking, I should not be feeling, I must be a bad person because of that feeling of joy. And it's really not, it's kind of human to feel that. It's just what happens in the battlefield, things that we don't understand, but they do happen.
When we hear that in Ukraine now, that the attacks are just relentless, they're just one after another, I said to myself, I'm watching this, I'm listening, and I said, don't they sleep? Don't they just, I mean, you know, they're doing the shooting continuously. I mean, why? They're not sleeping? You know, I mean, I know,
I don't know how to explain this to myself because I've never, I don't have a soldier, you know, around me that I can ask. I mean, we have soldiers, but they were not in the active wars. So, I have no words, you know? Yeah. I don't know how it's done. What, do they sleep? Do they take shifts?
They take shifts. Yeah,
they take shifts.
Yes, of course. They have to, you know. I mean, they probably don't take long shifts, but they do have to take shifts. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And that's why the camaraderie, the feeling, the being together, the strong bonds, because they're all looking up for each other. And they describe, and some of them describe that they would give their life to protect their squad. They would. Some of them do throw their body on a grenade to protect their friends, so that their own body will absorb all the shrapnel, and their friends, their squad, will be protected. It's that intense connection and deep bonding with the guys, and that's also the thing that they are missing a lot when they come back, because they don't have that anymore, and that is also so deep that gets them into depression when they lose that when they come back.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Chris. We're going to go for a quick break, and we have Julie Winter joining us in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned. How to adjust and protect our mental health in these uncertain times. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Julie Winter's World. Julie, well-known internationally as a brilliant psycho-spiritual therapist, channel, astrologer, and author of DancingHomeBook.com, available on Amazon. Julie is sharing her gifts and talents, answering your questions in times of economic stress and uncertainty. Welcome, Julie Winter.
Good evening, Julie, and how are you tonight?
Oh, good evening, Marietta. I am well, thank you.
That's great. Well, I wish we would have a happier topic, but we don't. But it all needs to be discussed because it's on the minds of the entire world, on our minds. We're in America, in Ukraine, people are suffering. And how can we adjust and protect our mental health in these times?
Yes, good question. So one of the things that I'm aware of through my own work during many years as a therapist and a healer and through my meditations is that the first thing to do is be aware of your own body and do whatever you can to strengthen your body. And I'll tell you why. Chaotic and distressing, tragic times such as these are a tremendous stress on the body. So whatever you can do, eat well. I know some people have better access to food than others. Organic food, unfortunately, is much more expensive than food you buy in the supermarket that has chemicals in it. Eat well, stay hydrated. First thing, take care of your own body, because that will help you tolerate the stress in the best way. Do some sort of movement. When COVID erupted in the United States, as you remember, it was February, it was cold. So people who went to the gym weren't going to the gym. People who exercised at yoga class weren't going to yoga class. It's very important, and now this has been, we're going to our third year, and things have changed, but it we're still under stress. It's very important to move your body. Bodies were made to move, to breathe, to stretch. And as people began to work at home on their computers, more and more people sat still for longer and longer periods. So eating well, staying, keeping your body hydrated, stretching and moving, very basic things help you manage the stress. In addition, we have to take care of our emotional body. So the physical, the emotional, the spiritual. Be connected to your feelings. Sadness, anger, sometimes joy. Often people during this time have become depressed. Not the kind of depression where your brain chemistry is out of balance, but it's called a situational depression. People who are alone, isolated. It's difficult for human beings to be isolated. Isolation in a prison is a punishment. The other side of isolation is, if you're fortunate, it can bring you more deeply into yourself, into compassion, into an open heart. Talk about your feelings with people. Mm-hmm. If you're a person who's religious, talk to your minister, your priest, your rabbi, your roshi, your shaman, and stay connected. Stay connected to your friends. There's a tendency when we get isolated to make ourselves more isolated. It gets harder to reach out, to make that effort and reach out and stay connected to your community, to your friends, to your family, so that you don't feel so alone.
Julia, I've been, sorry.
Yes, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I've been really going up and down with my feelings. Of course, I was telling Dr. Chris that,
yes.
Of course, I have to prepare myself for the program, and I could not include our Ukrainian brothers and sisters and talk about them and what's going on in their hearts, in their minds, and everything. But in preparation, during and before, I look for different articles. I'm connected with different people from Europe and hear different stories, and it is really, really affecting me, where I just have to remove myself and just sit very still. Very still.
Yes.
No TV on, no music. I just need to just sit there. And that helps me. It helps me shift my mind. And I do this maybe, I don't watch the clock, but the longer the better. And then
yes.
I can pick up again, and I can finish, or I can do some housework or whatever I need to do. But this tremendous sadness, I have tears going down my face.
Yes.
Right now.
It's really important. So you're fortunate not to have the feeling, but to have the feeling and know you have the feeling and have access to express.
Yes.
There are many people who can't cry.
Yes. I could never live with myself if I ignored this whole thing and would jump on the wagon with the gas prices and the food prices and everything else that the media tells us about every single day. And to me, that's manageable. It will go away at some point. I know that. So
yes.
We just have to adjust. I will only speak for myself. I can adjust with the gas prices, with the food, and this, that, and the other. But what's happening in Ukraine, that is the most important thing. That's the most important thing. And I could never turn my head and say, well, they're far away. I don't need to watch television or radio or listen to radio or read the internet. I could never ignore that, never, ever.
No, and you've also mentioned two things that are very important. One is having your feelings, being able to be in your feelings. The other, which I was going to bring up next, having to do with your nervous system and your emotional body, is finding ways to be quiet. Because being quiet in the midst of this tragedy and stress allows your nervous system to calm down. So if you're a person who meditates, to meditate, as I've said before on this program, if you've never meditated, it's very hard to learn how to do it when you're by yourself without a teacher. However, anyone can close their eyes, just as you said. Close your eyes, no media, quiet. Close your eyes, follow your breath, and sit for a few minutes. If you can do it for more than a few minutes, that's good. And it calms your nervous system and then allows you, as you said, to come back and do your housework or whatever needs to be done. But those periods of quiet support your capacity to manage the stress and tolerate it. One of the other things that happens when people are stressed, and I said this to the people with whom I work and the people I teach at the beginning of the pandemic, is that when we're frightened, so we were in a pandemic, which is frightening, we were isolated, which we're unaccustomed to and is frightening. Now, in addition, we're trying to cope with the tragedy of this war, is that people tend to regress emotionally. That means that the fear and the distress cause you to behave in a way that is younger than your actual age. Why is it important to know this? Because it affects people's judgment, their behavior, the way they interact, and calming your nervous system, doing some movement, staying in contact with your friends, with your community, with your family, even if it's on the phone or online, also helps to relieve stress. And you were mentioning before, Marietta, that your feelings are up and down, what's called labile. Your moods shift.
Yes.
Very easily. And that also is a result of stress, that where you would normally have a smoother emotional rhythm, under stress, your people's feelings may go up and down. They may, as I said, become depressed. It's very complicated, and we do the best we can with the hope that ultimately this is going to make people more compassionate, more aware of other people's suffering as well as their own. So many people have come forward to assist the people in the Ukraine. Not only individual people, but nations have come forward. So there's an uprising of compassionate feeling for the people who are suffering and dying. Very complicated.
It's not only preparation for this radio show here tonight, but mm-hmm. I was telling Dr. Chris before you came on that I'm working on the Healing Mind magazine, the April issue, and I had come across a couple of wonderful articles. And one article is about, it's actually just a picture of a woman in her 30s. She has both hands. She's pulling a suitcase and a backpack in the other hand. I'm looking at the picture right now. And she has two cats in a very soft bag right on her chest, by her chest, on her front. And
yes.
She's holding a dog, maybe a 20-pound dog, on a leash. And he's also on a strap. He's strapped to the cat bag. And she's walking. And you see her face. The body language is she's on a mission. She's getting the heck out. She's getting
yes.
out. She doesn't look depressed. She's just acknowledging the photographer, but she's on a mission. I can tell on her body language. And there is no sadness around her. I would sense it. The other article that I saw that I also want to put in April
mm-hmm.
was about a woman she's in her 50s, also took out the little dog, also under 30-pound dog, on a leash. She has no eye contact with the camera, and she's talking
mm-hmm.
about what's happening in Mariupol, and the town that everything was bombed,
yes.
except
yes.
her building still stands, and she's saying in this whole article that was written I'm going to finish this, and she is explaining how much this whole everything is affecting her. The dead bodies, how people are not being buried, and she said, I'm going to die here. I'm going to die. I'm
mm.
sure I will die soon, she's saying. So, and you can tell from the article, even though it wasn't written by her, you can tell it was written by a journalist and translated, that it's a done deal already. It's a done deal.
Yes. Yes.
With her. And between one person feeling one way and the other person, when I'm reading this, I'm looking at this, it affects me, and I try not to because I don't even think about it, and it creeps up on you just like fog. Before you know it, you're in the fog, and then I had to put everything down, and I sat very quiet for an hour today. It affects you. It affects you.
There's
nothing you can do about it.
No, and what you can do when you notice, that's staying in touch with your feelings. When you notice it has affected you, you went and sat quietly. Another thing that's important to do in these times of stress is to reach out to other people with kindness. We need people who aren't caught in the midst of it, to be kind to each other, to be conscious of each other, to be compassionate toward each other. Because that will not only help them. I think it was Abraham Lincoln said, when you're feeling poorly, do something for someone else. Because that too will lift our spirits.
Yes. And I will have another article, and we're friends on Facebook. Her name is Gabby, I forgot the last name right now. And she lives in Bonn, B-O-N-N, Bonn, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And she made an apartment in her house available for two women from the Ukraine. So she had, over the weekend, she had two women come by, one woman with two children, the other woman with one child. So I said, Gabby, I would like to write about that. I said, we all help in whichever way we can. Some people give financial help.
Yes, exactly.
I like to help. She said, I wasn't planning on renting it anyway, so this will be free of charge for that person. So I will do a little article. I got all the pictures and, you know, the interview questions from her back today. And I just think this is the greatest thing, how people are helping. I know we have people here from the States that just, you know, left their job to work over there, whether it's the famous chef that's cooking in Poland now, or we have soldiers that said we want to go fight in the war. People do what they feel is you know, what they want to give. And
yes, you reach out in whatever way you can. And these are big ways.
Yes,
if you can't reach out in a way that's that dramatic, we can all reach out in smaller ways.
Yes, absolutely. And I really now understand why the people needed the carriers for the animals when they arrived from Poland to Berlin, because you cannot carry a big plastic carrier with the cats in it. The soft bags over the shoulder bags,
no,
or the front,
right, those,
you know,
right,
that works,
right,
but not the other. Now, Julie, I know you brought something else with us about what's very close to your heart, your book, DancingHomeBook.com, your book, and I know you want to talk about Serena. We have about 5 minutes left in the entire show, so I would ask you if you could share that with us.
Yes, I would be happy to. So this is from my book called Dancing Home, and it's from the chapter called Hooks and Stars, and it's about Serena, who is meditating, and at the beginning of her meditation practice. And the time in this book is the time of the Vietnamese War.
Ah, yeah.
Rose leaves early in the morning, and Serena goes into the little room off the kitchen where she meditates. She has learned to meditate from reading books on the subject and a little from friends. She sits almost every morning and evening in this odd, small room that holds the grumbling refrigerator, a round table made by an unreliable boyfriend. Both he and the table were short-term, but the table outlasts the relationship. And a delicate old desk she found in the street, fumigated and painted a pale marigold. She sits on a cushion on the floor, facing east toward the window, sometimes imagining the footprints of people long dead, resting beneath the green paint on the floor, their tread hidden but still present. This is a very old building. Many people have walked through these rooms. She breathes softly. Her blood seems to settle. In winter, the steam pipe hisses and shrieks as she sits. In summer, noises from the street collide around her. Often at night, she can hear the drums in Tompkins Square Park. Vigorous, repetitive, they accompany her. As she breathes, she watches her thoughts roam, random and sometimes as insistent as the drums. What is in her bottom cupboard drawer? The red wool winter socks she cannot find? Maybe. She remembers the cold river in her childhood summers in New Hampshire. Wonders if Rose misunderstood a comment she made. On and on, thoughts drifting by or catching her. So she is lost in that icy green mountain river, or suddenly back at her mother's house, hearing the hissing, ominous tones of Ruby's voice when she was enraged. She longs for the quiet mind she has read about, and she is a staunch person, determined in her efforts, not yet learning to surrender. Dusky skeleton memories rise. Unbidden, the old red music room in her elementary school, the people around her, and then she's quiet, meditating, breathing softly. I can't take anymore, and it looks like... So that's the end of Serena and her beginning efforts at meditation, which continue through her life.
I thank you for that. That is the DancingHomeBook.com by Julie Winter. Dr. Chris?
Yes, Mary?
Dr. Chris, I want to thank you for being here tonight with us. And Julie, thank you as well. We wish it would be different, but those are that's the situation we're all in, and we try to educate how we can guide, how we can be guided through these hard times, and we just begun with that. So I want to thank you. I want to thank Rich for our engineer, and we will see you next week, Tuesday, 7 to 8. Winters, have a good week, everybody. Thank you.
Have a good week, everybody, too.
Have a good week.
Thank you, Dr. Rich. All right. Thank you, Jerry Winters.
I just broke down and cried, and it looks like I'm never gonna fall in love.